Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
World Series preview episode.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it is. It's World Series time, Dallas. Shout out to Bryn, by the way. She put out the new episode of Morning Wood, which was the World Series prediction episode. I mean, motherfucking thing looked like a trailer for a new HBO docuseries.
Quality shit.
Yeah, it looked fucking awesome. So everyone at Barstool gave their predictions. And some of us on this show are saving it for the podcast, which is, you know, that's what we do here. We don't fight for free. Marty Mush just jumping in the ring for no reason.
This ain't no soup kitchen.
Yeah. We don't fight for free here. But on the day of the World Series, and you couldn't ask for a better game one pitching matchup, especially after given that both series in the NLCS and ALCS went seven games for the first time since 2004. You remember that year, Dallas?
Oh, four.
That was the year you got drafted.
Year. The year I started to play baseball and get paychecks legally.
That was the year you got drafted. That was also the year that the Astros and Cardinals went seven games. I believe Jim Edmonds hit a walk-off homer to send that series to game seven. And then the Yankees went up 3-0 in that series. You remember that?
And were you talking about 07?
04.
04. Yeah. No, I don't remember.
Yeah, Yankees went up 3-0 against the Boston Red Sox.
I remember that.
Yeah. And then, they became the first team in baseball history to not win the series after being up 3-0. We almost saw that a second time, but it just didn't happen. And I'm still
just couldn't quite make enough noise.
Yeah, I'm still trying to process how I feel about it. You know, like I'm still trying to process how I feel about it. There's two sides to it. And I think it's pretty obvious to figure out what the sides are. A, this side over here, Dallas, this is the side that doesn't want any team ever to come back from being down 0-3 besides the 2004 Boston Red Sox. That's that side of things.
Understandable.
On this side of things, yeah, I want fucking Dodgers Astros in the World Series again. Yeah, I think that that's the best storyline. I think that that draws the most viewers. I think that that has the most drama.
Can we establish something here?
Sure.
Because there's a difference between wanting and acknowledging what could rile the sport up. So I want to have you on the record.
Yeah, I want it.
You want that. You were actively rooting for the Astros.
No.
I think the World Series.
I think if
no, there's the, that's the only way you slice.
No, it. if Houston was down 3-1 in that series, I would have wanted them to come back and win that series. But no, I didn't want them to come back from being down 0-3. I wanted them in the World Series, just not bad enough for the Red Sox to not have that distinction.
Well, okay, so then that's another.
Yeah.
Caveat that we've added to this.
Correct.
So not only were you rooting for the Astros to get there, it just so happened that they would have gotten there in a historical fashion,
yeah,
which would have not made you happy.
Correct.
So at that point in time, you're not rooting for them to get into the World Series in that fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Should they have gotten to the World Series under any other circumstances,
mm-hmm,
aside from coming back from an 0-3 deficit,
yeah,
you would have been all in on
all
it.
In.
And you're a fucking scumbag,
yes,
for that. You,
well,
just need to know.
I feel like
you are. Yes, scumbag.
It's a, like boxing promoters. Like, how many main events have boxing promoters put on where it's like, yes, this is going to draw big numbers. I mean, maybe some of the participants in this fight may have some domestic assault violations racked up against them for other reasons, but a lot of people are going to watch.
Well, I'll give you this example. Like, if you're an MMA fan, You know who Greg Hardy is, and if you're an NFL fan, you know who Greg Hardy is, and you understand what the fucking psycho was doing with his girlfriend. And when he is put on a card for the UFC, I always say this. The reason that there's the attraction, sure, there might be folks who are fans of his, but more times than not, the people that are watching that are looking for vindication.
Yeah.
They're waiting for retribution. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what that would be like is, sure, people would tune in, not because they're cheering for the Astros. The like 1% of the Astros fans would absolutely be cheering for their team, understandably so. But everybody else, it doesn't matter who else would be in that World Series, everybody else would be pulling for that other team.
Yeah.
Nobody in baseball, aside from an Astros fan, would ever go, you know what, all things considered, I wouldn't mind seeing the Astros in the World Series just because they play good baseball. And because fuck no! Nobody is trotting that take out there. Nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that World Series really would have done numbers. But, I mean, I think...
And there's no denying that. And the back and forth?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, look, what happens if in Game 1, Kershaw gets touched up by the Astros? Mm-hmm. Right. Then it's like, oh, well, look, really? What was there anything to it? Because they did it back then and they did it now. And then you get the Correa rounding third, hand to the ear. What are they going to say now? Yeah. Well, I can't hear them. What are they going to? And that's exactly what it would have. So I promise you, though, you would have liked the idea of it. You would have enjoyed it. Maybe by the end of it, it would have been you witnessing a pit bull absolutely mangle a little teacup poodle. You'd be like, I don't want to watch the end of this. I know how this goes. Like, stop it. Please, please, somebody stop.
I don't know that it would have bothered me as much as it would bother your average baseball fan.
Yeah, it would have fucking irritated me. I would have struggled to watch that fucking World Series. Yeah. And, like, how do you have an opinion about it without just completely blasting what you know to be true? That's the tough part about it. And until, as I've said before, until fans get that pound of flesh, until they feel like they've said everything they can in the direction of the people they feel so offended by, that will always remain. That'll wear off, but during the World Series, it was not going to get better. That's all we were going to have was conversation about unfucking believable. Is this team really – like, it would have – honestly, it would have taken away from, I think, what could have happened on the field.
Yeah, I mean
– the storylines around it would have been bigger than the production on the field.
You're literally talking to someone – who voluntarily signed up to drive 17 hours in a car with Casey Smith just for the chaos. So
yeah, no earplugs.
Yeah. So I feel so I'm probably the last person that you should ask, like, how would you feel if the Astros were in the World Series? Because, you know, if it's not against my team and I'm not saying I would be rooting for the Dodgers to win. I, however, would have my bucket of popcorn seeing what would happen. And if they did happen to, you know, pull off like a 2-1 series lead, 3-1 series lead, just seeing everyone lose their collective fucking minds like that, that would be entertaining to me. And I'm also just, I understand that the psychology behind, just because it's not the outcome that you wanted doesn't mean that it's the right outcome for the storyline. Like, you, in order to keep a viewer's interest, I mean, if the good guy wins all the time, then it's like, well, there's no unpredictability. The feel goodness of the good guy winning all the time, like, that comes down every time the good guy wins.
I'm just done paying any fucking attention to this team for any other reason other than winning ball games. That's
sure,
just where I'm
sure,
at
yeah,
with this whole thing. So I don't want to root for the because it's not even cheating fatigue. It's the other shit that comes along with it, like retribution, the vindication that I'm talking about. I'm talking about that for fans because those are the folks who were absolutely riled up about it, feel cheated about it, right? Look, I had my day in the sun. That's long fucking gone, and it really wasn't a warm day. So the idea of feeling cheated by these guys as a member of the sport and whatever, that has worn on me. That has worn off on me because I can't do anything to make it better for myself, right? So what am I bitching about? I hold the opinions that I have, and I'm tired of fucking hearing. I'm tired of talking about The fact that we're talking about the fucking World Series game one right now and the conversation is about a club who's not fucking in it, that's the problem. That's my grind with it. So move the fuck on. Yeah, you're a bunch of cheating fucks. Yeah, you're going to get your opportunity to prove that you didn't need it. I'm fucking done talking about it. I'm just thanking God that I didn't have to sit through this World Series with that team, with that conversation surrounding them and the behavior that we've seen. Because at no point have they tried to make it better. So at no point do I think a lot do baseball fans or are baseball fans interested in watching them come out unscathed and shiny on the other side. No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Well, speaking of not wanting to talk about them, did you see Jeff Luhnow's interview last night?
I didn't. And it wasn't on purpose, but I tell you what, I read fucking 10 minutes. I read an article this morning, and let me tell you if I got it straight. Let me ask you if I got it straight. Did you watch
yes.
it? Okay. Here, I'm Jeff Luhnow. Man, I wasn't the only one. And I tell you right now, if you did your homework, there's probably some other people in that building right now who are guilty now, just like they were guilty then. And for whatever reason, I'm going to be the scapegoat. Myself and AJ Hinch, somebody had to get fired. Heads had to roll somehow. And what are you going to do? You're going to fire some low-level employees, as we like to call them here in Houston? No, you're going to go for the big fish, and that's me, Jeff Luhnow, the big fish. That's AJ Hinch, the big fish. So call me a cheater. Call me what you will. I've got evidence that says that I wasn't that guy, but you don't want to listen to that. You just need somebody to take the fall. So here I am, Manfred. Nail me to your cross. Did I get it right?
Pretty much, yeah. Like,
yeah, I didn't need to sit there and listen to him give me some fucking bullshit about how he doesn't feel he's a cheater, how he didn't oversee any of the motherfucker, you're steering the ship.
Yeah.
And if you don't understand that, then there's just a certain level of intelligence that is required for me to sit down and listen to you. And if you can do what you've done and have everything unfold that unfolded and then ask me to sit and listen to 15 minutes of you and why you're not as guilty, fuck your face. I've got no fucking time for you.
Yeah. He said the investigation, like, that the Dodgers were the team that were most outspoken, being like, someone has to go down. Like, someone big has to go down. I want the general manager. I want the manager. Like, the Dodgers are the one that were basically recommending which people should go down. So the investigation took longer because Major League Baseball was desperately trying to find something on Jeff Luhnow to pin him as a guilty party. And he was saying that none of the language in the investigation says that they could definitively say he knew about it. It was just mostly speculation, and that he turned over his cell phone and they went through 20,000 text messages, and because he was trying to cooperate. And he kept talking about...
That's what happens when you fucking cheat, bro.
Yeah, he kept talking about how he voted in favor of stiffer penalties for teams that were cheating electronically, and how he helped Rob Manfred come up with the framework for rules that they actually ended up using for cheating and all this. He's like, I've been an ally for, you know, anti-cheating movements in baseball.
Imagine someone being involved in a system to punish individuals who are breaking the law, and then that individual actually ends up breaking the law. Wow, what a fucking crazy thought that somebody on the inside
sight.
I mean, come on, this is what I don't need to hear. This is what I don't need to see. Yeah. I didn't need to fucking hear about it this morning. I didn't need to watch it last night. I could read about it, and like I said, it took me 5 minutes to understand. Yep, Dallas, you woke up correct, not even having to sit through that bullshit.
Yeah. One of the points that I was gonna make earlier, and I don't know how the fuck we got here, but when I was saying earlier about how wow, what a fucking trail that was. Here's where I was trying to go. Okay, so I said that both series, the ALCS and the NLCS, went 7 games, and I said mm-hmm. it was the first time that happened since 2004, and then we started talking mm-hmm. about the 2004 Red Sox and Yankees, and then that turned into a conversation about the Astros. So yep. Now here we are. But here's where I wanted to go. We went right. Okay. I wanted to go left. Let's go left. All right, here's what
Come
I was...
Come on, Columbus, find land.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is that how cool is it that both of these series went to 7 games... and yet, we still have a game one pitching matchup of Tyler Glasnow versus Glasnow. Clayton Kershaw. That's where I wanted to go.
This is what I'm excited about, is that both series went seven games. So I feel like you got a really good look at these clubs.
Yeah.
And what they're capable of doing. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't a four-game set where it was just domination on one side. It wasn't like a five-game gentleman piece where it's like, oh, okay, they showed some signs of life, mm-hmm. but then actually just got their ass kicked mm-hmm. the other four games. That didn't happen. You saw some outstanding performances on the mound via starters. Mm-hmm. You saw some guys stumble, and you saw the bullpens step up and do work. You saw lineups bludgeon people. You saw lineups have to produce runs and scratch and claw, and look at what that could look like for each club. So I think when you talk about the outlook for a World Series, what you want to do is have a good feel for how each club is playing at the time and what they're fully capable yeah. of, the depth of that roster. And that's what each one of these that's what both of these series did.
So I know what my answer is to this question, but I'm curious what you think. Being that both of those series went seven games, mm-hmm. what emerged from, like, what aspect were you most impressed by from the Rays and the Dodgers? Like, something that, like, this team used this tactic, or just something that they can do that other teams can't do?
The Rays, it was to trust their unconventional, or what can be perceived as unconventional, approaches on the mound. But that's something that we've been aware of. And their resilience. The resiliency for the Tampa Bay Rays. Because, again, it's not a lineup that is chocked full of AL MVP candidates. And it's not a lineup chocked full of high-dollar guys. So you have to have each one of these guys in some form or fashion step up and produce. And the world has been treated to the emergence of Randy Arozarena.
Yeah.
And you don't get to where you're at right now if you're this Rays club without that kind of performance showing up. You just don't.
Yeah.
You just don't. And then Choi, who's been great for him all year, not a ton of power flexed in the CS, but he got some knocks.
Oh, okay. In the CS.
Oh, sorry about that. But he's not, I don't think Garrett Cole's up for, well, game nine. I think Cole's got game nine.
Yeah, Cole's out to dinner with Tanaka.
But that's what I saw for the Rays, was a strict adherence to their approach that has gotten them here, to their approach that has turned them into the club that they are, the one that competes the way they do on the mound. Charlie Morton, 67 pitches or whatever the fuck it is through six or seven. He gone, done, and you're going, oh, excuse me?
66 what? Pitches.
66 pitches through seven? Seven? Is that
not
right?
Not even, no. I don't think so. I don't even.
Or was it?
I think it was like the
no, it was,
fifth
or
the sixth.
Six plus. Yeah. It was six plus, I think. And that right there was the, like, okay, you know what? They're not panicking. And though it looks like a panic move, that's what the Rays have done, right? That's how Charlie Morton's been managed in these situations before. So for them to not fall victim to the energy around the moment,
5 2/3 and stay for Morton,
5 2/3, yeah. So yeah, because I think I had like a 5-inning outing lined up for him or whatever, and it was almost so. 66 pitches, 5 2/3. The unconventional wisdom of the Tampa Bay Rays, the depth and the resiliency of their lineup, minus that huge star factor power. And for the Dodgers, their freakish ability to flip the switch.
Yeah. And it's not, so the biggest thing for me that came out of that Dodger series is the fact that the Dodgers have the ability to start a guy like Dustin May and Julio Urias and also use them out of the bullpen, like, later on for multiple innings. Like, that, I mean, that's the ultimate flex. Like, the fact that they have dominant starting pitchers at the top of their playoff rotation, and then also have guys that they can put at, like, the back end of their playoff rotation who they can then later use for multiple innings out of the bullpen to piggyback their other starters. Like, that is such a weapon to be able to use that. And the Rays don't have that. I mean, like, they have two frontline guys, or three frontline guys, really. If you want to talk about Glasnow, Blake Snell, Charlie Morton, like, those are three guys. And their bullpen that they you know, the stable back there, they can all blow 97. Like, it's not like they're in a slouch position either, but I feel like when you have when you have depth in your rotation to be able to use those guys as starters and as relievers later down the line, like, that's totally invaluable.
It's a different dynamic. Like, think about the A's starting rotation and who those guys are, right? They have five bona fide starters. So compare that to the Rays. There's more depth in the A starting rotation. Now, if you man each guy up against the other guy, there's probably some canceling out going on in favor of the Rays. However, once you get past that third spot, to your point, you're sort of looking around like, all right, well, you could give us three or four. You might be able to give us three or four. And for the A's, they've got starters four. They've got starters five. They've got starters six. And for the Dodgers, it's along that same vein. They've got the guys that they can run out there and start, but the flexibility with Dustin May, the flexibility of Urias being able to essentially throw a productive bullpen. That is the key, right? Mm-hmm. You get them their work early in a game two, knowing that they're going to be around for a game four or five. You don't have to worry about bullpen. You can actually get outs on their work day. You can get outs on their work day.
Yeah.
And that is a massive, massive tool. That is an ace up the sleeve for Dave Roberts. It is. Yeah. And that's where, like, that's what's going to be important too, is can that bullpen for the Dodgers, being run out the way that they do, can they maintain that? Can they sustain that level of production over what is going to be potentially 8 days or so?
Yeah.
With a day off?
You know who's sustained an elite level of production over a long period of time? Cross Country Mortgage.
Have they?
Yeah.
Putting roofs over people's heads.
Of course. It's important.
Well, tell me about it.
You want me to tell you about it?
Well, you're the one who you obviously have the information. You just asked me the question, did I know? I said no. You told me that Cross Country Mortgage is the place to go. I'm all fucking ears.
It is the place to go. Because it's America's crazy good mortgage company. Cross Country Mortgage combines a people-first mindset with dedication to the fundamentals of mortgage lending, which results in a fast, easy, and stress-free home financing or refinancing experience. A personalized approach of assessing individual needs has always allowed Cross Country Mortgage to serve their communities and forge lifelong relationships since 2003. Wow.
Well, that's good. I'm going to need a lifelong relationship with a mortgage company, especially since I'm looking for houses.
You are looking for houses. How is that going, by the way?
Going well. I actually got a tip from a real estate agent out in the Massachusetts
area. Oh, what area are we talking?
Yeah, well, I'm not exactly sure the area. We're painting with a broad brush right now, but I've got a I don't want to call her a sister wife just
right,
yet.
Cross Country Mortgage has the solutions to serve virtually every mortgage situation. They can make it easier for more people to get the financing they need to own a place of their own, especially first-time home buyers, military veterans, and people with less than stellar credit. How's your credit, Dallas?
Fucking phenomenal.
They're licensed in all 50 states and offer a broad portfolio of traditional, traditional and niche loan products. Whew. When people want to buy a home, they want it done quickly, and Cross Country Mortgage delivers. They deliver fast closings with a highly efficient process. In most cases, underwriting is complete in 24 hours or less. That's convenient.
That's quick. That's efficient.
They partner with top vendors to offer the best technology without the big price tag and pass those efficiencies and cost savings along to the customer. If you already own a home, Cross Country Mortgage can help you help with refinancing to improve your current financial situation. Now is the best time to renegotiate your contract terms and take advantage of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Mortgage rates have reached record low levels in 2020.
Woo!
And refinancing now means you probably won't have to worry about your rate again as long as you own your home. That kind of peace and mind allows you to do other things with your time, energy, and the extra money you will save. And you will save it.
You will.
So here's the deal.
Tell me.
Go to CCM M is in Massachusetts, CCMLens, L-E-N-D-S, .com, /go home.
Oh.
That's what the Astros just did. Am I right?
Got him.
Got their ass. So that's CCMLens.com/go home to learn about your future home buying experience or to refinance your current mortgage. That is CCMLENDS.com/GOHOME to learn more. Great. Cross Country Mortgage LLC, NMLS 3029. Equal housing opportunity. Wow. Okay. So now we got to talk about some of the stuff that happened before all this. Because I know that we still have some World Series stuff we got to get into. But that NLCS between the Doyers and the Atlanta Braves. We've got to put the Braves to bed here. Because I don't know about you, but I am sad. I'm sad about the way that this season ended. And yes, the Dodgers were the better team. They are the better team, objectively speaking. But it felt like the Braves' time, didn't it? Didn't it feel like this was the year where it was like, all right, I mean, the Dodgers are the fucking placeholder. They're there every single year, but people are bored of the fucking Dodgers. People are bored of the Dodgers being there year in and year out. Like, okay, either shit or get off the pot. You're just always there. You never actually do anything. If you're not going to do something, then let me come in there and do something. And the Braves came in, took a 3-1 series lead in the NLCS, and it looked like they were about to go to the World Series. And if it was against Tampa, which it ended up being, that's a pretty good matchup for them where I feel like they could have gone on to win a World Series title. And I know that if you're a lot of Braves fans listen to Starting Nine, I would say that's probably one of our biggest demos.
Markets.
Yeah. I feel like after like Red Sox, Yankees, A's, Dodgers, there honestly might be more Braves fans than Dodger fans that listen to Starting Nine. I don't know.
Probably.
But I think so. You can make the case, yes, the Dodgers were the better team. But is that really just all you have to say to yourself after a series like that? It's like, well, the Dodgers were the better team. It's like, but we fucking knew that before the series started. Like, we didn't need to know that.
Well, and they did. And you got, that's why I think this series, it did. It worked out the way maybe it should have, the Dodgers being the better team, but the Braves having every opportunity and really every resource to be able to combat the Atlanta Braves. And that's saying something when you don't have a guy like Soroka, when you don't have a guy like Hamels, and you still feel like you have every opportunity to win that series. That is what I hope the Atlanta Braves fans are thinking about today. And that does them no good. They don't want to hear that shit. Dallas, shut your mouth. We're not here for the fucking consolation prize. I'm not here to give it to you. I'm just here to make sure you understand that the reason that you were here, the reason that we're even having this conversation right now, is because of just how good your team is and just how good that young pitching rotation is and what those guys, fucking Bryce Johnson's going to step up and do absolute filth, just doing work. Yeah. When you have outings like that and stuff like that shows up, that's almost tantamount to the Arozarena production. Problem is, Bryce can't throw 6, 7, 8 games like that the way Arozarena can pop 6, 7 home runs throughout his postseason tenure. So, though it was just one outing and it was huge by way of momentum at that time, they just weren't able to sustain it to the point where they were able to put the Dodgers away. And that was where the Dodgers flipped that switch. Because they get out to a 2-0, or they fall to a 2-0 deficit very early on. And then, remember, the Dodgers showed up, and what'd they score?
15.
Fucking 16 runs? 15, 16
15
runs?
15-4.
I mean, come on. That's the definition. Like, you are 2-0, getting ready to go down 3-0, and you turn on an offensive switch that sees you score 2 touchdowns. The entire
11 runs in the first.
I mean, they set a fucking record.
Yeah.
Just absolutely pummeled the Braves.
Yeah. It was kind of just like a reminder, like, hey, by the way, we're the Dodgers. Like, I know you guys are up 2-0, but here's a fucking haymaker. Like, you started off the fight just throwing like a flurry of punches, and a lot of them landed. But then the Dodgers threw that haymaker to kind of back the Braves into their own corner again. And now it's 2-1. But then the Braves go up, and it's like there were a lot of people being like, okay, did the Dodgers just break the Braves' spirit? Like, they were having the conversation on MLB Network when the Dodgers won that game 15-4. They were still down 2-1 in the series, but they were asking the question, who's in control of this series? Because Clayton Kershaw was going game four. So it was like, did you have to step on their throat in game three if you wanted to win this series? The answer ended up being yes. You know, like if you were up 2-0, the Dodgers have the 15-run explosion in game three. So now it's 2-1. You got Clayton Kershaw going in game four. So that felt like, I mean, you can't just pencil it in for a W, but Clayton Kershaw had never lost to the Braves in his career.
Ever.
He had never lost to the Braves. And yeah, it felt like it was fair to say that the Dodgers were in control of the series, and then they lose that game. So the unthinkable happens. Clayton Kershaw loses to the Atlanta Braves for the first time in his career. So now it's 3-1, and you're thinking, well, this thing is zipped up. You have three chances to win one game. That's all you got to do. You have three chances to win one game. And they didn't do it. They lost three straight, which, you know, you think about it on a, from like a series perspective, and it's like, well, yeah, that's, you know, you like the Braves' chances to close out the series when they're up 3-1. But then you think about it from like a regular season perspective, and it's like, well, yeah, the Braves are a good team, but would you be surprised if I told you the Dodgers swept them? No. I mean, Dodgers are very good. So they were totally capable of pulling off the comeback. And I know that because on the other side of things, the American League side of things, there was a lot of discussion about, well, the Astros just came back from being down 0-3. Like, no, they didn't win the series, but they became the second team in baseball history to even force a Game 7. The only other team that did that was the 0-4 Red Sox. They were the only team that forced a Game 7, never mind won it. The Astros forced a Game 7, and Tampa was able to hold them off. But a lot of the holy comeback discussion was happening in the ALCS, not the NLCS. But how impressed were you that the Dodgers were able to come back from 3-1?
I was extremely impressed, because you think that if they're going to do this, if they're going to make noise, then we're going to have to see them click on all of the cylinders that make them the team that they have been this entire year. And then that happened. Then the bullpen showed up and was fucking dominant. Urias was dominant. I mean, aside from Seager, I think Urias is one of the, like, could very easily have been an NLCS MVP.
I agree. I think if Seager doesn't make history, like, literally you had Ken Rosenthal after the games being like, Corey, you did this, and this broke this record. How do you feel? And Corey's just like, I'm just happy we won the game. Like, he's not thinking about, like, he's the most, and there are dudes that are fake humble. Like, yeah, read me those fucking stats, and I'm going to tell you how I'm just happy the team got a win, and they're ready to taste themselves that entire time. That's not who Corey Seager is, but he broke tons of offensive records in that series, and that's, I think, what it took to keep the NLCS MVP away from Urias. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, incredible. And look, and I know people, I even tweeted it out, like, he needed that last three inning performance. He needed that. The Dodgers needed that from him. He stepped up.
Yeah.
Say what you will about the guy off the field, I don't think we need to discuss where we stand, you or I, when it comes to shitbag human beings on the baseball field. But let's understand that we're talking about the performance of the individual on the baseball field, and it was as big of a performance as they could have hoped for, as they could have gotten out of him. And remember, at the beginning of it all, I said one of the things to pay attention to was how Kenley Jansen was going to be deployed. Are they going to avoid him and hide him? And if so, who's going to step up in that effort? And, well, Kenley himself stepped up, but Urias, he helps that.
Kenley, by the way, his last performance, I think it was in Game 6, right? Mm-hmm. Game 6. I think he had heard enough about the 89-mile-an-hour slop. He was hucking 94 up there, top of the zone. Yep.
But this series, too, Jared, the defense.
Yeah.
Fucking incredible defense. Think about that double play. Was it by Justin Turner? Double play, game 7. Yeah, it was like a contact play, and he ends up fielding the ball, tagging out whoever it was that was running. They get in a rundown, tags him out, and then throws the ball to third to get the double play. And then fucking Mookie Betts. I mean, my
He's
God, Karabas. My
Kevin
God.
Kevin Kiermaier better, but...
I don't know if you read... Really? You believe that? You believe that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible. Great article in The Athletic about who Mookie Betts is as a player, as a teammate, mm-hmm. how he works on his defense. Just so yeah. much to love mm-hmm. about this guy.
Awesome player.
And for everybody to see it on the yeah. game's biggest stage.
For sure.
You got to
like
see
Randy
how Mookie.
Like Randy Rosarena, like that dude. By the way, is Wander
great,
Franco is
Betts,
Wander Franco playing
about,
in this World
let's
Series?
Talk about the
did you
defense.
See that picture?
He might be.
Did you see that?
I did see that picture of Wander Franco. Did you see the picture of Mookie Betts after he elevated to rob that last home run, Jared? He
I
was.
Don't think it, none of them were home runs. They would have just been like,
was,
that was
"Oh, it was a homer." That last one was a homer. That was definitely a home run, which is why that catch was all the more special because it was just another example how Mookie Betts can impact the game, even if he doesn't have a bat in his hand. So the defense on full display for the Dodgers as well. You just got a example of what a well-rounded team looks like. If you were to look at a team's win-loss record and then watch that game play out, you look at the Dodgers go, or that series play out, you look at the Dodgers go, yep, that all makes sense. Top flight offense, incredible defense, great arms on that staff. I like it all. They got superstars.
They have superstars, but I think everything that you just said, besides the incredible offense, the Rays have two.
You said about the Rays?
Yeah, the Rays have two. And I mean, you know, it's not even like...
If you go across the board, though, rotation, who are you chalking that up to?
I mean...
Because we're talking Bueller, Kershaw...
And then what, Dustin May?
May, Urias...
I don't know. I mean, I like Glasnow, Snell, Morton. Like, especially so with, it depends on how you look at it. Because, Morton didn't have the best regular season. And, the peripheral statistics for Glasnow this year weren't tremendous. But, stuff-wise, Bueller, electric. Kershaw, and it's hit or miss in the playoffs. And Dustin May, he was a little shaky his last time. He started Game 7, didn't look great. I think he threw eight straight balls just to start. I don't know. I mean, I feel like in this series, I'm not saying if I'm going to build a team, which three because, guys do I want? I'm saying in this series, which rotation do I like more? Tampa.
Because now you have to think, all right. The guys that I'm mentioning in the back end of this rotation for the Dodgers are also those guys who could be throwing meaningful innings in games 2 and 3 because they're going to get their bullpen in because they'll be starting games maybe 5, 6. So there's not a ton of depth again in that Dodger rotation, mm-hmm. right? Like Gonsolin, is that who you're going to run out there?
Gonsolin
against?
Was fucking nice this year, though.
What? And who does he match up against for the Rays? Their starter, Yarbrough?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a first 2.5 arms for the Dodgers, and you've got three.
Could you see Tampa in Game 4 going with an opener, and then using
if Tampa
Yarbrough
gets out to an early
bridge?
Lead? If Tampa gets out to an early series mm-hmm. lead, I see them utilizing a day to go bullpen to try to reset and get guys back on early.
I think that they will get creative. Like, this is the World Series, and they are the Tampa Bay Rays. So it's almost like, you know, Bill Belichick will save a trick play just in case they get to the Super Bowl. Like, he'll run that out there being like, hey, there's no game after this. There's no series after this. So we got something for you, but we were saving it for that, like, hey, we're going for it because there is a title on the line here. So
what do we have, two games and then a day off?
Two games, day off, three games, day off.
Two games, day off, three games, day off. So, again, that's a built-in day off. So who's day one? Charlie Morton? Or excuse me, Glasnow. So Glasnow goes today. He'll have a day off tomorrow. Then he will have a day off altogether on Wednesday.
Thursday. Thursday, everybody's off.
Today's Tuesday, right? Okay, so Tuesday, Wednesday. He starts Tuesday, day off Wednesday, and then full day off on Thursday.
Correct.
Which would be his bullpen.
Yeah.
So then Friday could mean innings for Glasnow.
Right. Like,
depending on what today looks like. Because if it's a shortened outing where he doesn't extend himself pitch count wise, then he might come back. But if he goes for whatever reason and is cruising and is able to go 7-8 innings because the Rays get out to a lead or whatever, that's where I'm curious to see what the Rays do. Do they say, hey, look, no, we've got an 8-run lead. It's the fifth inning. We can see Glasnow returning on 3 days rest and giving us 3 innings or so. We're gonna game plan for that. We're not gonna burn 30 extra bullets here, 40 extra bullets here with an 8-run lead in the fifth inning.
Yeah.
We're not gonna do that. So that's where the unconventional approach could very well be a thing here in this 7-game stretch, depending on how the Rays want to do.
Yeah, and I forget who the fuck it was that maybe it was Will Middlebrooks.
Because what did he just do? Threw 3 innings on fucking two days rest?
2 days rest, yeah.
And that was after doing the same thing on short rest? Like an inning and a third or some shit,
He only
right?
pitched twice in that series.
No, not this last series, before. Didn't he pitch on short rest before
that
as well?
That was when he pitched on 2 days rest.
Oh, I thought he's pitched on short rest twice.
No, he pitched. It was in the division series. They brought him back in game five. So he made one start, came back on short rest to start game five.
2 days. And that's the thing is typically it's a 3-day rest piece. Not two.
Yeah. But I forget who tweeted this at me. Maybe it was Will Middlebrooks. I forget who it was. But asking the question of, like, if you're like, are the Rays ever going to be able to sign like a legit ace, like not even just talking about financially, because obviously they're a small market team, but if you were like a bulldog, like obviously not Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole's not going to the Tampa Bay Rays under any circumstances, but cut from the same cloth of give me the ball. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to give you 7-8 innings, shove. If you're seeing how Kevin Cash is managing these games, wouldn't that deter you as a starter from going there? Like, hey, I know that you're like on two separate occasions, you've had Kevin Cash go get Blake Snell with a shutout going and like 70 pitches or 82 pitches, maybe something like that. And then you've had him go get Charlie Morton, who has godlike numbers in the postseason and was at 66 pitches with a shutout going. Hook. Like if you're cut from that same Garrett Cole cloth, are you thinking twice about ever signing with Tampa?
Well, you have those conversations. That's what those meetings are for. That's why they fly out to your house and have dinner. That's why you go golfing. So over a 4-hour period, over 18 holes, I can make sure you understand. I'm not the dude you're coming to get in the fifth inning with a shutout going. And if you understand that, then we can keep play. Then yeah, let's play the back nine. Let me hear what you have to say. But if on hole 7 and 8, you're just telling me like, look, I appreciate you as a competitor. The reason we're interested in you is because You do have the ability to go deep. So what we'd like to do is maximize that until you pedal to the metal for five or six, get out of there, and we're going to let the rest of the guys go to work and do it. Where are you at in your career? Have you made your money? Do you have a ring? What's important to you? That's all of the things that factor into how the Rays are going about manipulating their pitching situation. So if you are aware of this as a new draftee, Friday night guy from your school, and you want to go nine every time out, and you're a bulldog, this and that and the other, well, when you get to pro ball for the Rays, that conversation is going to be had, and you're going to find out very quickly who you think you are, who they think you are, and who you're going to turn into based on what you can do on the field. And that's all. That's what I love about the physical aspect of the game and the physical aspect of sport, is there's no opinions that are going to impact this. The production is what it is. The outs are what they are, and everybody falls in love with those. So there's no circumnavigating you wanting the ball but not being worth it. If you're worth it and you're getting those outs, you're going to get the ball. But if you get through that lineup and here comes the third time and you're just a piece of shit and you struggle, and they're not going to give you that opportunity. They're just not. So as a high-end free agent, if you're a horse, 200-inning guy, like if Mark Burley was in the prime of his career and looking at the Tampa Bay Rays as a potential landing spot, they would have to either get Mark Burley to understand that he's just not going to be throwing 110 pitches to get through seven innings anymore, or Mark Burley would have to get them to understand, every 5 days, I'm just not the dude that you're coming to grab at 70 pitches. Got that?
So one of the names that we haven't really mentioned at all yet, and I feel like that's a crime against humanity, Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger in Game 7 with that
belly bomb,
that fucking
celly bomb,
Ken Griffey Jr. strut to first base, dropping the bat, watching it go, slow little walk up the line, and then the celly with Kike Hernandez pops his fucking shoulder out. Not great. I
where are we at on home run celebrations / touchdown celebrations? Where does that land in the pantheon of what the fuck just happened?
I mean, it was only a matter of time, right? Like, these are professional athletes that are fucking very, very, very strong. And then you get to a point where it's game seven. So, like, everyone's juices are flowing. The adrenaline's flowing. Like, people are, like, imagine bumping forearms with, like, fucking Giancarlo Stanton after a playoff home run. Like, he'll blow your fucking arm out. And that's what happened to Bellinger, but it was Kike Hernandez.
No, like Liam Hendricks will do the same fucking thing, coming in after a save, just all jacked up, high-fiving people, and he does his little fucking karate chop, and he'll just hit me, like, right in the... I'm like, hey, dude, I don't have that same juice you got going right now. Like, can you fucking not? You're going to have a bloody stump here. But that look at the fucking... Look at the eyes on Kike.
Yeah.
Look at the... The guy is... The man is possessed. When he hit that home run... He looked like he had a touch of the Giolito.
Right.
Like, what? Did you just get bit by a fucking zombie? What is going on?
Yeah.
And just absolute maniac. And so, yeah, you go up to celebrate. Kike rips his goddamn arm off. I hope he's okay.
They say he is, but I don't know. I mean, it's not like a sport like football where you would want to hide an injury. Like, yeah, I'm watching the fucking video. I mean, like, they both jump and... Then it, like, Jock goes to, like, give him, like, the chest bump, and Cody's like, no, no, no.
Yeah, spin move. He goes immediately to the spin move. And that's, and, dude, I wish I could listen to interviews of guys who have had something like that happen, and I just want to hear about the 15 seconds after. Your elbow hits. You feel your shoulder pop out of place, and right then, start the clock, because here comes Jock for the chest bump. You know what you have to do. You rotate out of the way. Can't let that fucking arm get hit again. And like, but you still have to maintain the face, right? Like, we're still happy. We're still celebrating. This is still exciting. My arm just fell off, but we're still happy. What is the mindset for guys in that moment? Like, what are you thinking? Like, am I fucking done? Like, was he thinking about playing in the World Series? Was he thinking about just like, did I just have my last at bat of the season right now? Like, I want to know what they're thinking in that moment. Cause you have to believe I've been there where I throw one pitch and feel and hear a pop, and every pitch I've thrown up until that point and every pitch I could possibly throw just flashed across my brain.
Yeah. I mean, especially the way that he was favoring it going down the dugout steps where, he was holding it like he just blew his fucking arm out.
Well, it's because it's out of place, and it, like the subluxation to sub, like that's what it means when your arm pops out. And look, as a guy who has nothing in my shoulder to keep that fucker in place, that happens, and it is. Not to get off topic here, maybe a week ago, I was leaning down on the fucking countertop in my house, leaning down just like this. I think I was looking at the spider in our spider tank, and I had my arm at a certain angle. I went to push up and I couldn't do it. I sat there for probably 7 minutes on the island because my arm was in an angle and I couldn't move. My wife died laughing, just fucking laughed her ass off staring at me because I looked like Craig Kimbrell looking for a sign, but with my face on a granite countertop, completely compromised. Yeah. Good move. Shoulder out of place, just out of fucking nowhere.
Well, she can laugh at that now, knowing that, like, yeah, that whole shoulder thing right there, that's not what pays the bills around here. So as long as that mouth of yours is working, we are just fine. Like, don't you worry about it. Now we can laugh at your pain. So Bellinger, I think that's something to pay attention to, because I think that they are downplaying the shit out of that.
Jared, right arm, buddy. Think about the finish. Yeah. On the swing. You can't finish high like that. Yeah. You can't extend with any sort of trust. Think about what, like, go back. Yeah. Mm-mm. It's not great. I hope to God it was just like a quick in and out thing, but you can tell by the video that it wasn't a quick in and out. Cause that's the best thing that can happen, is it pops out and then pops right back in. And it's just like, oh, did that just happen? Yeah, that just happened. All right. Take it easy for the rest of the day. But for him, that thing was forcibly jarred out of place.
Yeah, it didn't look like it felt very good. He still stayed in the game, like went out to play defense, and they're like, yeah, we're just gonna pop that shit right back in there. But like you mentioned, the finish as a lefty with the right shoulder, it's not fun. I've done that. I popped the left shoulder, so like the finish arm, and it's almost like when you're trying to do like a lateral raise, like you can't go higher than like horizontal or perpendicular to the ground. Like it's so foreign
because you've never been in a spot where you like, oh, I just can't move any farther than this. Why can't I? Yes, I can. I just keep moving my arm up.
Can't.
No, you can't. And then when you think you can, an insurmountable amount of pain ensues.
Yeah. It's not fucking fun. But the Dodgers are moving on. Playing Tampa Bay Rays, but one of the official sponsors, the Barstool Sportsbook House, is DraftTop. DraftTop, the bar tool designed to remove the top of aluminum beverage cans. The thing is pretty cool. I've seen the videos of them using it. Drink topless. You'll love what cans have to offer. Experience the full aroma of your drink right out of the can. But you basically just fucking make your goddamn can into a cup.
There's no mystery here.
It's not rocket science. It creates an incredibly smooth edge that safely turns your can into a cup, and that right there is the important part to me, because the first time I heard about it, I was like,
tear your lip.
Yeah, I was like, this thing is gonna rip my lips open, which I need my lips.
Yeah, I'm not trying to turn myself into a giant human bass and hook myself with an aluminum fucking can.
It's perfect for adding garnishes and mixed drinks, add fruit straight into the can. Enjoy your beer as the brewer intended. Go to drafttop.com. Use the promo code STOOLIES to get 15% off your purchase of DraftTop today. Also, did you get the? Did you buy some clothes from Mack Weldon?
I have not yet.
So I have. The shipping was lightning fast.
Quick, huh? That's what I hear. Well, I mean, tell me about the books. You have them. Yeah. I'm looking to get them. So please tell me more.
Yeah, I mean, the new normal uniform has a lot of us searching our closets and drawers for men's essentials that aren't there. Instead of the usual business casual button-ups and jeans, it's soft-knit polos, tees, joggers, and active shorts. Whatever men's basics you need, Mack Weldon has you covered with unmatched comfort and fit. I actually, like I said, we went on the website, went through it. I actually had a friend pick out clothes for me. I got like a personal stylist now. Like whenever we have someone come on board, where it's like, hey, we're gonna be doing some business with Starting Nine. We're a clothing company, and I'm just like, hey, let me dive in. Let me, you know, help me help you. If you're gonna work with us, let me work with you. So I'll send the website on over, and you know, my own personal stylist will pick out the clothes for me, and next thing you know, I got
a fine clothier.
Yeah, I got some. Next thing you know, I got two. Like I said, the shipping was lightning fucking fast. Like, I'm not even saying that. Like, I don't even think in this ad read they tell us to talk about the shipping, but it was lightning fast. Socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, polos, or active shorts. Mack Weldon promises comfort and a consistent fit. Versatility. Looks great, feels great from working out, going out, going to work, or on a date. Mack Weldon is for everyday life. Technology. Wide range of customized fabrics that can keep up with you no matter what your day looks like. 18-hour silver, air knit X, dry near, warm knit. Got it all. Weldon Blue, totally free loyalty program. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life. Once you reach level 2 by spending $200, you get 20% off every order for the next year. Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep and they'll still refund you. No questions asked. So for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/starting and enter promo code starting. That is MackWeldon, MackWeldon.com/starting, promo code starting for 20% off. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics.
Not to be confused with third and distant cousin Mark Weldon, he of the reindeer long
yes
patent
right we've talked about this ALCS a decent amount, but what were your impressions from this? Did you think, because I actually going into game six, and I got the receipts to prove it, going into game six, my thoughts were this is going seven, but the Rays are going to hold on. And that's what happened. And I don't know why I thought that the Astros weren't going to get the job done in game seven, because that was the whole narrative in 2004.
I had no good reason to believe that the Astros weren't going to do it.
I think the reason, there is an explanation. It wasn't just like a gut feeling or just a wild guess. My thought was, the Tampa Bay Rays are not afraid to just throw the entire kitchen sink at you in a game seven. Mm-hmm. Like, whoever wins this game is moving on. And we're the Rays, and that's our thing. We're fucking wacky, and we do all this shit. So it was almost like they were just going to confuse the Astros into losing the baseball game. And that's more or less what happened. It wasn't like a complete just bullpen game. They didn't bullpen them to death, but it wasn't a conventionally managed baseball game. Like, it wasn't Derek Lowe for seven innings and then a reliever in the eighth and a reliever in the ninth and see you later. It wasn't like that. That's just not how this game goes anymore. But that's that. If the Rays were to win game seven, which they did, I felt like they were just going to almost just like a blitzkrieg. It's just, we are coming at you from all angles and we're just going to fucking, like, you're not going to see what's coming and we're going to hit you with everything we got. And, you know, Mike Zunino hitting home runs. I mean, the dude is like a lifetime 200 hitter. Like, that guy coming out there and being an offensive spark.
They needed the big knock.
They
got the big knock.
Yep.
They got the big knock. And that's the difference with this Rays club and the Astros club that they were playing against, is if you look at that Astros lineup, you'd be hard pressed to be guessing where the production has come from, right? Like, you know where it's coming from. I've said it all fucking year long. I'm not saying anything we don't know. It's 1-0 Astros when George Springer wakes up in the morning. And then what Altuve was doing during his postseason run, and Correa just putting the team on his back. Tucker was swinging the bat well. Maldonado hit a couple of big homers. I mean, you were going to get that production from everywhere. Gurriel was absent. But the point is, with the Rays lineup, you have those same type of guys that you can identify as reliable pieces, but if they're not swinging the bat well, a la Brandon Lau, and you're wondering, all right, he's like 0 for October, at some point in time, this is going to have to get better if the Rays are going to further their run here. And what did he do? They threw him in there against the lefty, Framber, lead off, right? Fucking lead off. Hey, Skip, I'm 0 for, I don't give a shit. You're leading off. Go get him.
Yeah.
And little votes of confidence like that, guys are able to kind of tap into, and guys were able to run with. And when you think about, look, we know how comfortable and loose-knit the A's clubhouse is, because I talk about it a lot, nothing we don't know, but the Rays clubhouse, they got a little bit of that going on as well. Guys are fucking blasting music. Rosarena's fucking probably taking BP in his cowboy boots somewhere. Yeah. Like that's the kind of vibe that you needed. This is the first fucking rookie position player, Jared, to be named MVP of the CS.
Is that true?
It's what it said. It's written down on the internet. So I don't know how you don't believe that.
Rookie first MVP of a league championship series that was a rookie?
Yes.
Huh.
First rookie position player.
Oh, position player.
MVP.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
Did you not hear that first part? Yeah, that's nuts, right?
Huh.
So when you're wondering or you're asking, like, who does that production? Fuck. Carlos Correa was doing what Randy Arozarena did. And Arozarena did it better.
He did do it better. And his team won.
That's why the Rays. That's why the Rays are moving on. So again, trying to pinpoint who and why and usual suspects and all that, the Rays aren't going to make that easy on you. So you do have to do a little digging. You do have to realize sometimes it is just about guys emerging at the right time.
Yeah. If you're a Rays fan, If you're a Tampa Bay Rays fan, what's your approval rating of Kevin Cash after that American League Championship Series? Like after the Blake Snell hook and the Charlie Morton hook, I mean, they won the series, so you can't be too picky, but where are you at in terms of your approval rating of Kevin Cash?
Where are you at in your Rays fandom?
What do you mean?
Do you understand? No, exactly. Do you understand that this is how your organization goes about things? So if you're looking for your organization to treat you, and if you're looking for Kevin Cash to treat you to a Blake Snell 8-inning, 12-punch-out, 2-hit performance, or a CG 3-run, that's probably not going to happen. It's probably not in the cards. When you've got a guy in Kevin Cash who's been vocal about the stable he has in the bullpen, knowing he'll go to that. So if you're a Rays fan who has come to terms with how this is going to operate and how these moves are going to be made, how the buttons are going to be pushed, then yeah, you're okay with this because you saw this coming. You knew that this was something that would be done. And you just hope that the homework and the diligence is done to the point where a move like that pays off. Because we talked about you having to bank on now three, four, maybe five relievers, all of them being on, all of them having a good day today for that sort of game plan to work out. But knowing when you're going to pull the trigger and knowing when you're going to pull the hook, that matters. So if you're a Rays fan who just showed up, maybe you're going, Jesus, I'm listening to these two assholes on the internet tell me Tyler Glasnow is a sex god and he should be able to get deep into a ball game, and why isn't it happening? And Charlie Morton's getting pulled with 66 pitches. What the hell's going on? If you're that fan, maybe you're not as quick to give Kevin Cash his flowers right now. But
so it's our
fault.
The
reason you are here, the reason you are here is because Kevin Cash has done what he's done all year long with this team.
Yeah, he has. That's he has done this all year long with this team. But I feel like it's magnified in the postseason. And is Kevin Cash pulling Charlie Morton with a shutout in 66 pitches if it's not game seven of the ALCS? Of course not. Of course not. But that came back to pay off. Like 5 2/3, he calls in, who was it? It wasn't Castillo, was it? I think Castillo came.
Yes, it was.
Castillo came in for Snell and blew it.
Yes. Was it? It wasn't Fairbanks.
No, Fairbanks closed it out.
Fuck,
I don't remember. I don't remember who came in for. Let's see. Anderson. Yeah, okay. Anderson came in for Charlie Morton. He went two innings, and then Fairbanks for four outs. Which, by the way, when that fucking camera cut to Tyler Glasnow warming up before the ninth inning, I was, you don't even want to know what was happening to my lower region when he was getting ready to come in. I was like, if this dude fucking comes in for the ninth inning and gets the last three outs to close out the American League Championship, ball game over. I don't know if you saw my new Twitter bio. Have you seen my new Twitter bio?
No, I haven't looked at it. We're gonna have to put you in a fucking pair of, we're gonna have to put you in a diaper.
Yeah. By the way, he's I've bullied him back into joining Instagram.
Is he back on?
So he deleted his social media in like spring training because he had it. I know he had it. Or like sometime in spring training, and then once the season started, he was out. He was like, it's, you know, not for me, not a big social media guy. And then half of my bullying him into coming back on, and there were too many like fake Tyler Glasnow accounts, so he's like, all right, I'll bring mine back as a placeholder so that people know that this is actually me and that the fake ones are fake ones. But he's back on Instagram. And I have updated my Twitter bio. It says unbiased national baseball journalist, Barstool Sports, starting nine, section 10, Morningwood, CCK, Tyler Glasnow Swipes Club. I mean, the Tyler Glasnow Swipes Club, like, we're going to have merch. We have to figure out a way. I mean, like, you can't just buy it.
No, you gotta, you're gonna have to earn this. You're gonna have to earn this. We'll have to put our heads together. Because you're right. This isn't shit that just gets passed out.
And is it a t-shirt? I mean, I feel like I don't want to like take the jacket from the Overs Club that Big Cat and Dave are having. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like we go, I don't know.
Is it a personalized box of Roman's wipes?
Like, I feel like there's gotta be a way to make our own thing. It's unique to what the Tyler Glasnow Swipes Club is all about.
What about a coin?
A coin. That feels too much we've been sober for 50 weeks. It's like I've been swiping for 50 weeks.
Well, there's also individuals when you're in their presence who may or may not have served in the military, and they drop a coin on you. That is a That is a huge show of respect, show of honor. So you could look at it like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what this is about. We're gonna kick it around.
Yeah, we'll come up with stuff. Something. I'm actually I've got a call with the merch team after we're done with crushing radio later. I want to throw out some ideas, see what stick. I just feel like, you know, my brain is just too. It's just too elite for the people that have to approve these ideas. None of my ideas get approved anymore. No, I mean, I've probably come up with 15 different shirt ideas. I think I put out one, maybe. Like, what fucking, mm-hmm. what have I put out for merch during the postseason? You think that I've just not thought of things? No.
Well, we're hitting roadblocks. Yeah. There's definitely some heels that have been dug into the dirt. But we're doing our level best.
We're doing the best that we can to give you guys the best merch possible. So we'll see.
But I'm sure, look, Jared, I'll tell you
what
this.
What are you gonna tell me?
I know that you're probably starting to develop a little bit of a headache when it comes to dealing with the merch.
I have a headache.
It's not easy. You've gotta find a way to reel yourself in, to slow things down. Get on that CBD train. Get on that
Heels
train.
Oh, I've been on
the Heels
train.
I know you've got them drops. I know you've got them drops. And, folks, you need to get the drops in you as well. I know what you're worried about. Dallas, the CBD stuff, like, I don't know. It's first time. Like, I'm afraid of the weed. Look, this ain't the weed. It's not the weed. You're not going to get high. There's no THC, no tetrahydrocannabinol. There is no active psychotropics here. It's just all wellness all day long. Shit is 100% natural, vegan. If that's a benchmark that must be reached for you, check. It's the cleanest CBD ingredients that actually work. So you're not just being fluffed here. The one thing that makes Helist different from the majority of the other CBD brands is, again, the highest quality of the stuff that is being used. This shit is grown right here in the good old US of A. CBD blended with other clinically tested ingredients to give you the relief that you're after. I wouldn't be telling you about this shit if it wasn't working. I promise you that. We have said no in the past, and we will do so in the future. This is not one of those cases because the shit works. I promise you. Sleep drops? You into sleep drops, Jared?
I am a sleep drop guy, yeah.
Sleep drops, they've got lavender, chamomile, a little lemon balm for your ass. Smells good. Does the job. The calm chews. The little calm chews. They've got ashwagandha and L-theanine in them. That's the money makers. Those are the money makers. And remember, Helist products, again, zero THC. Triple lab tested for potency and purity. And right now, for a limited time, you can get a trial size of the best-selling peppermint-flavored calm and sleep drops that I was just talking about for free. Peppermint drops, calm and sleep drops for free. And it's going to last you about 5-10 days or so, depending on how much you want to take before you go to sleep. So head on over to HelistNaturals.com/starting. Sign up, get your free sample today. Again, HelistNaturals.com/starting. Free drops. Get it.
Yeah. All right. Tonight's game one. Kershaw Glasnow. Who you got? This first time, by the way, someone was saying, when I was picking my bracket at the beginning of the postseason, before the playoffs started, and I picked my bracket, and I had the Rays and the Dodgers in the World Series. And someone was like, oh, wow, yeah, you're just picking the fucking two number one seeds? How interesting. And I was like, well, I'm not going to pick teams just to be edgy. Like, that's who I feel like is going to make it to the World Series. And that's who did make it.
That's the role I serve. I'll throw you out the asshole prediction at the beginning of the year. That's the role I serve. I'm okay.
Yeah,
with
but when the postseason starts a month ago, you throw in a bracket. Yes, my bracket had the Rays and the Dodgers in the World Series. Here we are, Rays Dodgers World Series, and I remember saying that like, it's not uncommon for the two best teams to make it to the World Series. Remember 2013? I think that was the last time. Like, I didn't remember a time that that happened after that. And as it turns out, that was the last time that it happened. The Boston Red Sox had the best record in the American League, and the St. Louis Cardinals had the best record in the National League. They met up in the World Series. And here again, we have it. 7 years later, Dodgers best record, Tampa best record, and this will be your World Series. And you've got a great pitching matchup in game one, which means that we're going to see these guys potentially three times.
What do you got? Who you got? Who you got game one? I'll tell you who I got game one.
I got the Dodgers.
I also have the Dodgers game one.
I think it's because...
Why does that pain you to say?
Well, because Glasnow's starting, but I don't think that Glasnow is going to be the reason why the Rays don't win. I think Clayton Kershaw is... I think Glasnow is going to go 6 1/3, 2 earned, 9 strikeouts. I think Kershaw is going to go 6 2/3, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts. And I think the Dodgers bullpen is probably just going to be able to... I think we get a low scoring affair. I think it's going to be 3-1 Dodgers game one. 3-1 Dodgers.
I like the Dodgers game one. I feel like they're going to smother Glasnow. And when I say smother, I don't mean... kick the shit out of. I mean smother. They're going to suffocate him. He is going to work deep into counts. I feel like they're really going to put his feet to the fire, trying to do everything they can to run that pitch count up there, get into the bullpen, because in this scenario,
if they were paying attention in the ALCS, the book is out.
What's that?
He's not throwing his changeup. Eliminate the curveball unless he can throw it for a strike. If you can't throw that curveball for a strike, eliminate the curveball, hunt the fastball. Done.
Yep. You're listening. I like that. That is precisely why I have the Dodgers taking this game right now, is because of the Dodgers' ability to cut their swing down, hit the holes. They get guys on base for Glasnow. That's going to be problematic. We very well could see a fucking track meet breakout with guys on base against Glasnow. Because I think Dave Roberts, and we know that Dave Roberts is not afraid of a stolen base.
Hey-o.
We could see him try to just, you know what, let's get this thing going here. Let's remind everybody of who we are. We don't have to wait around for this shit. When I get the fucking MVP, Mookie Betts, on first base, he knows he's got the green light. That son of a bitch could end up on third with nobody out. Mm-hmm. Don't know.
Yeah.
We have no idea. So I've got the Dodgers in game one, and unfortunately I've got the Dodgers in six.
You got the Dodgers in six. I've got the Dodgers in seven. I think it's going to be a series. I think it's going to be a series where you can see, like, basically what happened in 2018, where you can see the clear differences in who's got the best manager in their dugout. Although I gave a huge shout out to Dave Roberts for how he managed game seven against the Braves. I think, you know, for all the discussion about, are they going to fire Dave Roberts if the Dodgers don't win the series? Well, guess what? Dave Roberts said, fuck the analytics and the nerds upstairs. And Dave Roberts managed that game seven with feel, and the Dodgers won because of that. So I don't want to hear anything about Dave Roberts again until he fucks up. But yeah, I've got the Dodgers in seven, and I just think it's going to be an epic series. I do. I don't think it's going to be a bore. Like, you know, we've seen some World Series in the past where teams have just showed up and it's like, it's an inconvenience for us to be here. You might as well just give us the World Series trophy. I'm not talking about 2018, but like, that's probably like one that comes to mind where, it was basically a 5-game sweep. Even the game that the Red Sox lost, they should have won. So like, the Red Sox 5-game swept the Dodgers. But this one feels like, all right, You've got your style. I've got my style. It's almost like those old school UFC fights where it's like the huge fat dude versus like the athletic little dude. And it's like those are two completely different styles, but this ended up.
You talking about Emmanuel Yarbrough and
it was like UFC 1.
UFC 1?
Yeah.
It was actually called the David and Goliath match. Emmanuel Yarbrough, the large African American sumo wrestler, against Keith Hackney, the little black belt in karate, who ended up breaking his hand on the head of Emmanuel Yarbrough and advanced into the tournament, but had to bow out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually knocked Yarbrough down with a fucking open hand palm strike to the face. Knocked a fucking tooth out of Yarbrough.
Yeah. It is two completely different styles going head to head in the main event. And, you know, I feel like when you talk about the Dodgers payroll and everyone, you see the graphic going around where it's Mookie Betts and Clayton Kershaw's salary combined are more than the Tampa Bay Rays entire team payroll combined. Like stuff like that, where you do have this David versus Goliath, but like talent wise and are the Rays capable of winning the series? I mean, if you're picking the Dodgers in 6 and I'm picking the Dodgers in 7, that means that Tampa can 1000% win the series. Like no one's picking a sweep here. I think that you would be ignorant and just flat out incorrect if you picked the Dodgers in a sweep. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited. I'm very excited for this series. We'll see how it goes. Will be streaming tonight, Dallas?
I believe so. You got an X factor for this series?
An X factor for this series. An X factor for this series. Wow. Brandon Lau. Yeah. He was way too good this year to be this quiet this postseason.
Well, and that's why I said him getting the big knocks that he has recently, even just the push bunt. Just get him back on track, man. Get him back on track.
Yeah, I got Brandon Lau being the X factor for Tampa. And you know what? I got Max Muncy being the X factor for the Dodgers because he hit the grand slam in that 11-run first inning of Game 3, but he's hit a lot of balls hard and not had much to show for it. And he's played in the World Series before. Those lights will not be too bright for him. As you remember, he had the walk-off homer against the Red Sox in that World Series, the 5-game sweep. And, yeah, I feel like sometimes you make your own luck, and Max Muncy has the DNA to be able to do that.
I think the clear-cut answer here is Clayton fucking Kershaw. That's what my answer is. Be that guy. Be the dude. Just go out and be the dude that you've been. Go out the dude that you know. Go out and be the dude that you know you can be. And if that happens, I think that it can quickly turn into that's right. Like with Kershaw clicking in this time of year, this team is really tough to beat. This team would be really tough to beat. Because if it goes this series gets deep, you're going to see Kershaw again.
3 times, I said. Like, here's what I could see happening, too. And I don't want to put this into the universe, Dallas. But do you think the Kershaw narrative of, like, all right, we're finally going to get Clayton Kershaw a World Series ring, kind of like how Terry Francona brought Pedro into Game 7 in 2004, it's like, all right, like the who's your daddy chance and everything. Like, let's get Pedro out on the mound. And then he just gets rocked in Game 7. Thankfully, the Red Sox already had like a 10-1 lead, and that just made it 10-3. But I know what Tito was trying to do. It didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So if Dave Roberts is like, all right, this is when we get Kershaw a ring. Like, let's get him out on that mound for game seven. And it just doesn't work out that way.
I'll tell you right now, Kershaw warms up, if that's the case. And before Kershaw even hits the gate to get to the outfield grass to run into the bullpen, somebody else is already warming up.
Like, if it's like a 5-3.
Five one, sure. 5-2, maybe. Because even at 5-2, you can allow him to put a guy on base and try to get out of it. Big homer, we're still winning. If you were to go that route. But 5-3, no. Because you fucking give up a knock or a walk, I got to go get you. And how bad is that going to look if I go out there and the first guy you face, you put on? And now here I go from trying to, you know, give you your moment to scrambling because I don't trust you to get out of this moment.
Right.
Like, that would be a horrible, horrible look. You're going to have to answer that question. Hey, Dave, you had a 5-3 lead. Interesting move there to go to Kershaw. He puts a guy on base. Can you tell us what the thought process was and why you had somebody warming up already and why Kershaw only saw that one guy if he was a guy that you felt like you had confidence to start that inning? And that's where Dave has to tell you one or two things.
Is this the first time that we picked a game in unison? I feel like every time in like the past series, we never picked the same team on the same night.
No. Yeah,
and I've always been right. we've got Dodgers taking false. Game one. 1-0 series lead. You know what we should do? I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to like throwing out like a podcast a day during the World Series.
Just a little recapper? We'll see what we can do.
I think Jay Hay said Dodgers in six.
He did. Yeah, he's
Maui,
it's at that brass spittoon molding convention.
He's so good at that. It's crazy how he is just so good with his hands.
Well, look, you're talking about a guy who's grown up with brass balls.
Yep.
So brass balls, brass spittoon makers, brass hands. That's what he does.
And a lot of people obviously are asking like on the streams, like, hey, get Jay Hay in here. I don't know that he's like a pay extra for the internet at the hotel guy, like in Maui. Like Maui's one of those places where it's like, all right, you can go with your data or you can pay fucking whatever it is, like $49.99 for the hotel internet, which isn't even really that good. Otherwise, we'd probably be able to get Jay Hay on, but right now he's molding that brass, baby.
Yep, is what it is.
So we'll be streaming tonight, and you know we'll explore the option of maybe doing a podcast, like a little minis. Like we can do like a little mini podcast after every game, and then we can do like the big podcast as it's usually scheduled to go out.
Mini bumps, or maybe we just stay on the stream and have like a little 20 minute post gamer or something. We can figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
So stay tuned. Game one.
Right now.
Did you think we'd be here?
Yeah. I did.
I sure did.
Exactly how I picked my bracket.
All right, game one, strap it in.
We out.